Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
In the studio tonight, it's myself, the captain.
Riley.
And Beakless Mountaineer.
A lot of folks will be like, oh, you know who you should have on your show? And I go, who? And they name somebody. And I go, okay, here's the number.
Tell them to call.
Right?
You know? I mean, we'll take anybody. If Donald Trump wants to call into the show, 603-283-6160 is the number.
Trump,
I mean,
Biden.
Support yourself, Trump. Demonstrate to us libertarian types why you should be president.
There is one candidate that is running for president this year that I would love to have them call in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Their name is... literally anybody else. I'm not even kidding you.
That's perfect.
Because voting for nobody is just passe at this
point.
That's
perfect. I love it.
If you've been listening to Free Talk Live for any period of time, you know that there's a gentleman who's a sometimes host of this show. His name is Nobody, formerly Rich Paul. He changed his name legally to Nobody so that he could run for some offices and that kind of thing here locally. And so the idea was vote for Nobody. He made some really kick-ass signs, no pun intended.
Yeah, because nobody deserves to have this job. Nobody should have power over you. Nobody should be given the ability to do things that you can't do, like somehow ethically jail people for not doing what you like.
So in that same spirit... this from WRAL.com, which I believe is out of Texas. Might even be Virginia. I'm not sure. But the headline reads, Texas man changes name to literally anybody else to run for president.
Now, that's the perfect name for a perfect job. Literally anybody else.
It is.
Anybody else. Especially for this election season that's supposedly the most important of our lives.
I expect a fairly strong showing for this candidate. I mean, imagine, there you are, looking at this list, and, you know, I'm sure they'll throw in a handful of people that we literally haven't heard about.
It's going to be Trump, Biden, 17 other MFers that, you know, no one cares about or has ever heard about. Somewhere on that list going to be literally anybody else.
Right?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I didn't know that was an option.
And, like, I'm a non-voter, but if I were a voter and I saw that, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to check the box next to this name. Literally anybody else. I don't, like, it says so much about the American people as a whole, a large populace of people, that they have somehow allowed both the nasty old pervert versus the nasty old pervert. Again. Yep. Again.
Why does America love their reruns? Like, why do we have to do this time and time again?
Well,
I mean,
America's
been the reruns for decades now. Decades. Decades.
America doesn't have the choice in this. Let's not pretend that the people of this nation have any influence whatsoever.
Well, right.
Who actually gets
right.
this job?
As a mass quantity of people, they do.
No.
Yes,
they absolutely do not.
What has
the people the people that are in those parties, the people that are in the Democratic National Committee, the people that are in the Republican
National I'm talking about the individuals, the people. I'm not talking about the bureaucrats. I'm not talking about the people around. I'm talking about the people at large, the 395 million, whatever it is, people in the United States.
Close to 30, but yeah.
300, how many people?
330.
330 million? Okay, whatever it is. These people have the ability to act as a mass, and they do not.
I don't think they have that ability.
No, they do. They just don't exercise
it. Citation needed.
Because, like, in my life, no one has ever really exercised it.
Mine either.
Okay, if you're claiming that they have this ability, but it's never happened, then you're going to need some extraordinary evidence.
Just because I never kung fu kick you in the nards doesn't mean that I don't have the ability to kung fu kick you in the
nards. No, but it is some pretty strong evidence. And at that point, I'd need to see, like, okay, so here is Captain Kickass warming up, stretching. He can, in fact, like, reach a 90-degree angle with that leg.
Here's
it's like,
kata.
Okay, all right. So I'd need some evidence to prove that, oh, well, nope, there is some evidence in that direction. And no, the people have only and will only ever do what everyone is doing. The difference is that we can, as a small group, shift what that thing that everyone is doing.
And hopefully, literally anybody else, that's the person, can help us in this quest.
I hope so, too, because America, we've been FCCing ourselves for a long time. And
yeah, we have.
Literally anybody else would be so much better than Humpty Trumpty and creepy sleepy Joe Biden. This is what I love about being in New Hampshire. You know, the people that once lived here believed in the right to rebel. They were the first ones who fought against King George. And now it seems like we're still fighting against King George in the form of the United States government.
Yeah, we certainly are.
Yeah, there's an old story. It's kind of iffy, but it was about a Chinese official asked about what he thought of the French Revolution.
Yeah.
And he said it's too early to tell.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that really does apply to the American Revolution as well. It's too early to tell because, I mean, if you realistically look at it, we never did get free of the European powers and England in particular, especially in terms of our monetary system.
Right.
I mean, has crept up into an absolute dictatorship of our economic system, and we finally have a chance to get out of that.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the best part, is we have a chance to get out of that if the people want to take the chance. We don't have to have a violent, bloody revolution because violence just creates more violence.
Right.
War created 1812. 1812 began the American Empire building.
Mm-hmm. What we need is a peaceful evolution, in my opinion.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And that is, like, for the first time, like, in my opinion, an available opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Right? With the, we'll call it anarchist infrastructure available to us. In the form of things like, I mean, there's old stuff, gold, silver, right? You know, stuff that's been around forever as far as, you know, libertarian economics is concerned. But the new stuff, right? We're talking decentralized network effect technology, a.k.a. cryptocurrency, right? Blockchain technology, right? Stands to replace the monolithic, violent, antique, and barbaric structures known as government.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the things that what is commonly referred to as government does can be done for a much smaller price in a voluntary capacity, in a market-friendly way where it's voluntary, where you decide whether or not you want and need it and how much of it you want and need and how much you want to pay instead of it being coerced out of you.
Yes, so. And that, to me, of course, Captain, is why I'm here, because I believe in that principle. You can't force people. You can't force people to believe the way you do. You can't forcibly convert them.
Right. Well, you can. It just never really works out for you in the end.
You can't forcibly convert people. You can force people to pretend that they are converted. And yeah, this is why I'm very sincere when I'm saying, like, hey, we need to get this working without violence, because we've seen what happens when you attempt to overthrow the United States federal government violently. And let me tell you, even if the Confederate States of America had succeeded, they would have become a wretched tyranny of their own. So what we need to be doing is, like, with the revolution, we had already mostly transferred how we got things done to these committees of communication and committees of safety. And what that is social infrastructure. The reason that the Great Britain Empire no longer governed directly, although it did economically, but no longer governed politically, America, was because we had set up an alternative infrastructure, one that was not monarchical. And now we have the opportunity to set up and to expand a anarchist infrastructure, a voluntarist infrastructure, starting with the money.
And that, you know, Peakless, you make a good point. Like, starting with the money supply, without a government-controlled currency or a currency controlled by the church or the monarchy or whoever big monolith gang you want to talk about.
The Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Which is neither federal nor reserve.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They just print off these paper bills that people are just supposed to pretend are real money. And it's not. I'm
trying to remember the lyric. There's a 80s pop song, and it goes, teach your children quietly, for someday sons and daughters will rise up and fight while we stood still. And, like, that lyric has been stuck in my head since I sort of woke up out of the fog of statism. In my neighborhood, one of the homes that I grew up in, we had what's known as four-digit dialing. Right.
Wow.
So like our calling number
starts of this thing.
Our calling number starts with 603-283, right? Mm-hmm. And the last four is 6160. Now, the neighbor next door to us likely would have had a 603-283 phone number assigned to them because of geography. They're right next door. And then they might be like 6270 or something like that. All I had to do to reach the neighbor's house is pick up the phone and dial 6270. They conversely could just dial 6160 and get us on the old landline system, which still exists in large part, like in a lot of America.
Yeah, every now and again you'll see this on the old movies where it's, operator, get me 4210. And they just give you four numbers and the operator knows, oh, well, that's this one. Right. And I had to literally manually unplug this part and plug in this part.
The old days.
And I'm trying to remember what they stand for. The area code is known as NPA.
Mm.
And I think that's like national something, something. I don't remember what it says.
And this is the danger of initialisms.
And then the second
take
part.
Take the place of knowledge in your head.
Yes.
The second part is NXX. So the area code is NPA. The next three digits in your phone number are known as NXX. This is just national exchange, right? So NXX. X means exchange, right? And also,
so is that the National Exchange Exchange?
I believe it is, but the reason there's two X's is to account for the randomization of anything between 0 and 9 in that particular segment. So, for example, if you are a business and you're looking for what we refer to as a vanity telephone number, you want a telephone number that spells something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember that.
Advertise, right? 1-800 Flowers, right? Yeah, that kind of a thing, right? What you do is you ask for, you know, an NXX with, you know, something vanity, right? You can't really determine the area code. The area code is determined based on your geography of your business. Where is your business located? This is the area code that you must have, right? In New Hampshire, it's 603, right? But the NXX can be, you know, so if you're calling your phone company and you want a special number that says like flowers or something like that, you just say, hey, I need the NXX and the last four to be vanity. And they will supply you, generally speaking, with some sort of a list of what's available currently and the pricing to go along with that. Now, much like it's so interesting to me because coming up in telephony as a career kind of has a lot of similarities to the way the internet developed. And I'll tell you one of those ways. And that is with these vanity phone numbers, of course, something like 1-800-FLOWERS would cost you a pretty penny.
Oh, I'm sure
to
it would.
Obtain.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And every now and again, the FCCers, I mean the FCC themselves, will release like a new toll-free exchange. So when I was growing up, the only toll-free numbers were 1-800 numbers. Then, somewhere along the line, 888 also became a toll-free, we'll call it exchange. And then, shortly after that, 877-866 became also toll-free numbers. And then after that, 855 and 844 now are also toll-free exchanges.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I remember that Free Talk Live used to have an 855 number.
Right. Now, the internet, ironically enough, instead of having vanity toll-free numbers, they have vanity URLs. Flowers.com, freetalklive.com, right? You want, of course, a vanity URL for your organization, business, whatever it is you're up to that you need a website for. You want that to be, like, it would not be cool for Free Talk Live to have a website that was like, talk to us live freely.com, right? That wouldn't be very cool. It wouldn't be
memorable either.
Right, exactly. So, of course, the more popular a web URL, the more expensive it is. The more popular a vanity number, the more expensive it is. right? These are parallels in the two industries.
So why is it that we can't have a 555 number?
Somehow, somewhere along the way, they, and by they, probably the FCC, somebody, the FCC, Hollywood, somebody in there, decided that Hollywood themselves, the producers of motion pictures and television shows, needed a fake number that they could put in their television and movies where people wouldn't be able to dial it. Now, sometimes there's a television or a television show or a movie where they specifically put in an actual real phone number so that when people hear it, they might
be 867-5309-9.
Just like 867-5309-9. Yes. So like there are times when somebody deems that the thing that they want to do, but most of the time, they just want it to be like, you know, they want it to seem realistic in the scene. They're like, yeah. Here's the phone number. It's 555-3476. Right now, 555 doesn't actually dial anything in any area code. They've sort of reserved that for television and movies to make their fake numbers, so that they can have this one. We're going to call it a bank of numbers. If you don't know what a bank of numbers is, we'll take our number again: 603-283. And then in telephony, they would call it XXXX, signifying that it could be any number between 0 and 9 in any of those four places. That is known as a full bank. After buying the domain name literallyanybodyelse.com last year and starting to sell T-shirts with the name on them, the North Richland Hills father and veteran made it official on January. He was once known as Dustin Bay. Now he says the first name is literally, my middle name is anybody, and the last name is else.
I think it's the most brilliant of all political movers to vote this person, literally anybody else, for president, because literally anybody else should have the office. In fact, Captain, you've said on this show that the office should not exist, and I would agree.
Well, and as I've pointed out many a time, Trump is absolutely in the club, so to speak, of, you know, world-running psychopaths. He just wasn't in the special VIP section, which is why they're all so upset about it. Mm. But he was absolutely in the club of violent psychopaths that will 100% sell out everyone on Earth.
Yeah, somehow Trump got like a general admission ticket and like moshed his way to the front row.
Yeah, just sort of found himself backstage. It happens. But anybody else?
He grabbed him by the, well, you know, in order to get backstage.
Indeed.
Of course he did. He wanted to influence anybody he could, any way he could.
So speaking of literally anybody else, else is 35, the minimum age required by the Constitution to become president of the United States, and a seventh grade math teacher. Now he's a media celebrity too. Quote, America wants something different. We want something better. We deserve something better, he said. A judge had to approve the name change.
We do deserve something better than what the Democratic and Republican parties have handed us. That will always be true.
This is a quote from Mr. Else about the judge. She looks at it. She looks at me and she says, are you really going to be that guy? Else said, I paused for a moment. And I was like, somebody has to.
I know, somebody has to. I'm glad he's doing it. This is so cool.
Else describes his as a mission to neutralize the nonsense he sees as the presidential race between an unpopular incumbent and an unpopular former president. No lies detected.
Right.
I should not be popular, he says. There is zero reason that literally anybody else is taking off the way it is, he said. Else needs 113,000 voter signatures by the middle of May to qualify to be on the November 5th ballot in Texas. He says Texas voters deserve at least three options: Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and literally anybody else.
You know, I appreciate his sacrifice of his own name just to show how stupid this system is.
It's, and it, like, the more you look into it, people, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of Free Talk Live. The more you look into it, the more ridiculous it becomes.
I know. And the more ridiculous it becomes, the more people want to cling to this dying empire. This dying empire that's screeching its last. This eagle is finally dying. And people want to cling to the dying eagle.
And it's
why?
It's just even more, I don't know if ironic is the right word, but it's more like the juxtaposition really hits home for me. And that is that the United States of America, when, you know, everybody talks about the founding fathers and the Constitution, and you go back to like the Articles of Confederation and things of that were like the precursor to all of that. The overriding idea was this. We should try and make the smallest government possible.
Before we get back to our regularly scheduled programming, I'd like to promote an event I'm getting together.
What's going on, Riley?
So on Saturday, April 20th, it'll be a fantastic day. I'm
because of the happening.
Well, that may be happening too.
The baconing.
But there's another important event going on. I am putting together a cannabis freedom rally. So if you support the idea of cannabis freedom, whether you partake of cannabis or not, come to Concord, New Hampshire.
Yeah, man.
At the state capitol.
Yeah.
On the capitol steps, we're going to promote cannabis freedom.
Nice.
So whether you partake of cannabis or not, come join us.
Hey, you know what a stoner's favorite body part is? Ear.
That's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
So the baconing will be taking place on April 20th in Concord, New Hampshire.
Yep.
No bacon. Well, I'm not saying don't bring any, but like bacon
I mean,
may or may not
bacon,
be involved.
I won't turn it down. But...
It's spelled B-A-K-E-N-I-N-G, baconing, not B-A-C-O-N-I-N-G. That's a whole different event. Although, some would feel like those two events could, like, you know, really help each other out, some cross-promotion.
I mean, I love myself some good bacon, so,
me too.
I mean, I wouldn't turn down bacon if anyone wants
the real problem with Pork Fest, not enough bacon.
Yeah. Although I'm told...
Mind you, the right kind of bacon, the edible kind, not the figurative kind.
Well,
we have just the right amount of pigs there.
No, listen, I saw this. I've never eaten it, but I saw this. So, you know, both of you guys know that many foods can now be infused with marijuana, right? Because you can make marijuana butter or whatever and then, you know, make that into a bunch of different foods or whatever. Somebody figured out a way to infuse marijuana into chocolate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not uncommon. You can go find marijuana chocolates at any legal dispensary, even some illegal ones. You know, or somebody that you know is like, hey, I made some chocolates.
It might be weird tasting chocolate, right? But it's still... It'll take you somewhere.
So independently of the weed being infused into chocolate, somebody else invented chocolate-dipped bacon. Right? This is a thick slice of bacon, you know, cooked to, you know, not quite crispy, but almost crispy, so that it's firm and doesn't break apart real easy. And then they dip most of it into chocolate and then hermetically seal it and sell it as a snack, right? Well, somebody... A marijuana fiend, somebody who's a fan of cannabis or something, was like, hey, what if we dip the bacon in marijuana chocolate? That's right. That's right.
You will never stop eating it. That's what happens. Dangerous.
That is very dangerous.
Yeah.
So, like, what if I give everyone saltines before they get to my lemonade stand?
Well, I mean, this is an old thing that I don't see happening, like, literally at all, but, like, used to happen all the time back in the day. You would go to a bar, and you would order your beer or your cocktail or whatever it was you were drinking, and they would just set out in front of you a bowl of, like, unshelled peanuts or some pretzels. Mexican restaurants still do the chips and dip thing, right? But this is because of the salt content, right? So they want to serve you a salty snack because salt makes you think you're thirsty. And if you think you're thirsty, you drink more.
Oh, that's
right.
That's how they upsell
you. But also, like, it provides you a tasty snack. right? So like win-win, right? You get a tasty snack. That also helps you more ably digest the alcohol instead of like just taking the alcohol on an empty stomach, right? That might get you in trouble. Yeah. Might make you do some drunken things. But
it will hammer you harder, faster, that's for sure.
Right. But if you got a little something to go on, a little sustenance in your gut, you know, the alcohol doesn't hit quite as fast. And so it slows down those effects as well. So it's totally a win-win situation. And I don't understand, like, other than economy, right? Like, oh, it's too expensive to afford peanuts to hand out or pretzels. Or like, pretzels you would think would be cheap at most bars. But, like, I just don't see it. It's not like I'm going to, you know, I mean, I frequent some places around here. But, like, I'm not going out, you know, in the city, you know, that kind of thing like I used to. But, like, even in the city when I was back in Seattle, I never saw that. Right, for the 20-some years that I was there, I never saw anybody, unless you were outside of the city. You get into, like, the country parts, right, you know, in the mountains or the eastern Washington, that kind of a thing. Then you might see that, right, some, you know, mom-and-pop bar, you know, they might be, yeah, here, have some pretzels, yeah, here, have some peanuts, right, that kind of a thing. But it used to be totally common. Musk's SpaceX is building a spy satellite network for U.S. intelligence agency, sources say.
Surprise, surprise.
But no, he's about freedom and individual rights and not having the government control everything that we say and do and think.
Here's the thing that Musk is all about. Musk. That's what he's all about. He's all about himself. Right?
He's all about getting money, then influence and power and fame.
Yes.
Well, so
he's an egoist.
Well, it's a lot like, you know, we were talking earlier about how you have, you know, rich old white pervert or rich old white pervert.
Right. Yeah.
Now, in the same way, that's Elon's purpose. So you could have Zuckerberg or Elon Musk. You know, he's the cool rich billionaire that wants to put a chip in your head.
I'm just thinking about you guys ever see the movie The Fly?
Right.
And Seth Brundle was the scientist's name, and he goes into this thing where he's trying to make teleportation a reality, and he goes into this thing, and somehow a fly gets in along with him. And so he teleports himself from one point to another, but the teleporter mixes the DNA between Seth Brundle and the fly, and he becomes an amalgam. Blue? Yeah, he becomes an amalgam of himself and the fly, known as Brundle Fly, which is a portmanteau, right? So now, with all that said, can you imagine a Muskerberg?
Oh, man.
Or a Zucker Musk?
Such a horrible combination. All of these people are just horrible combinations. Like, how do people not see that these are just both sides of the same coin?
Because they do a really good job of presenting themselves as if they're different.
All right, let's get into this article. SpaceX is building a network of hundreds of spy satellites under a classified contract with the U.S. intelligence agency. Five sources familiar with the program said, demonstrating deepening ties between billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk's space company and national security agencies. The network is being built by SpaceX's Starshield business unit. Under a $1.8 billion contract signed in 2021 with the National Reconnaissance Office, NRO, an intelligence agency that manages spy satellites, the source said. Okay, so a couple of things here. A, I thought I knew all of the alphabet agencies that existed.
You do.
The NRO is new to me. I have never heard of the National Reconnaissance Office.
I have.
Yeah,
I spent a long time like on Wikipedia.
You spent a long time?
I spent a long time on Wikipedia, like just clicking from link to link to link about the United States.
You went down that rabbit hole.
I did. Uh-huh. I did. So I've seen all of the iconography.
I've seen some ass, man. I've really seen some ass.
OSI. Sorry.
Go on.
Yeah, no, I've seen all of the iconography. It is a tangled web, which is kind of what you would expect from a spy organization, for it to not really be obvious and straightforward.
Okay, this is hilarious for a couple of reasons on the surface. Anyway, without digging any deeper into this article, one, The United States government has its own space agency.
Well, yeah, but they can't do anything. Like, seriously. Okay, and for everyone, no, they really can't. So for everyone out there who's
once though,
for everyone out there who still thinks that it's possible to accomplish valid tasks with government, consider when NASA was formed, they had all of these brilliant engineers that they took out of the free market,
right?
Where they were actually trained to be capable, where they had this thing called market discipline,
yep.
Where if you suck, you don't succeed,
right?
Then they just sort of kept it there.
Ironically,
it hasn't done anything since.
Ironically, the first part of succeed is suck.
Indeed.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Indeed. Now, since it hasn't done anything of merit since, it's going to continue to not do anything of merit since. Now, Elon Musk comes along and he's like, hey, I can use engineers that are still in the free market and accomplish things like a rocket that doesn't just, you know, fall into the ocean and break, but instead, like, lands.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So, I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
SpaceX is building a network of hundreds of spy satellites under a classified contract with a U.S. intelligence agency, five sources familiar with the program said, demonstrating deepening ties between billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk's space company and national security agencies. The network is being built by SpaceX's Starshield business under a $1.8 billion contract signed in 2021.
Tell me that doesn't sound like something out of a comic book.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure at this point they're doing, like, the Ouija board for, like, and they're communicating with Stan Lee of, like, Marvel Comics. Like, dude, we need, like, a comic book-esque name for our new, like, militant spy space agency. And he's like, how about Starshield? Right?
But only if you put initials after every single letter.
Oh, my gosh.
The plans show the extent of SpaceX's involvement in U.S. intelligence and military projects and illustrates a deeper Pentagon investment into vast, low-Earth orbiting satellite systems aimed at supporting ground forces. If successful, the sources said the program would significantly advance the ability of the U.S. government and military to quickly spot potential targets almost anywhere around the globe.
Take that. Nothing eerie about that.
Take that,
flat earthers. Nothing at all. I just can't wait for the global government to track us every single place on the earth because I want to be so seen and heard by them. Thank you, government.
Yeah, the CBDC is just so convenient.
Riley, I'm sorry. I detect a hint of sarcasm there.
Oh, do you? Is your sarcasm detector running rampant?
Yeah, you might want to recalibrate. Yeah. I got more than a hint. I believe that counts as dripping.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you thought Elon Musk was the good guy, I hate to break it to you. No, not another good. He's not a good guy at all.
And I mean,
he's a wolf in sheep's clothing is what he is.
And I mean, like, he's an egoist, right?
Yeah.
In my opinion. And that means he's just out to, like, get himself in front
of... that's an egotist.
Egotist, yes. Sir, not
See, an
egoist yes.
Sorry, is an Ayn Rand guy.
I misspoke.
I was wondering why that term sounded familiar, egoist.
Or I misspoke. Did I just assume my own gender?
Did you just assume the gender of your own wrong speech?
I did.
Good job, Captain. Yes. I'm proud of you.
Me too.
And the marital status. What about Mrs. Spoke?
Well, why is it that that the ladies have a different term for when they're married and when they're not married, but the dudes don't?
I don't know.
Because nobody cares.
Dudes are just Mr. So
yeah, no one cares about men. Never have, never will. Did you know there actually used to be a... So men is actually just a reference to human beings.
Right.
There used to be a word for the male human being. We just literally don't care.
What was the word?
Were. W-E-R. The only thing that still has that is werewolf. Which is literally man-wolf. Yeah. That's the only thing left in our language that has werewolf the male human in it. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. It's the only thing left in the language because we don't care about men. We have no... We just don't care. Oh, you have the ability to sire. No one cares. You have the ability to birth. We care.
Getting back to the article, this contract that Elon Musk apparently has with some... what's it called? NRO, National Reconnaissance Office. The contract signals growing trust by the intelligence establishment of a company whose owner has clashed with the Biden administration and sparked controversy over the use of Starlink satellite connectivity in the Ukraine war, the sources said.
Not to be confused with growing trust of them.
Right. The Wall Street Journal reported in February the existence of a $1.8 billion classified Starshield contract with an unknown intelligence agency without detailing the purpose of the program. Reuters reporting discloses for the first time that the SpaceX contract is for a powerful new spy system with hundreds of satellites bearing Earth imaging capabilities that can operate as a swarm in low orbits.
Oh, wow. That's really terrifying.
And that the spy agency that Musk's company is working with is the NRO.
Combine that with AI? Wow, what a spy network.
Elon Musk, if he wants to build a satellite network and launch satellites into space, far out, solid, right on. I don't care. Go ahead. It's the to spy on. It's the doing it with government funding, in cooperation with the government, and for the purposes of spying on everybody. That's the part I have a problem with. If he's doing it to, I don't know, make your Starlink internet better, great. If he's doing it to, like, enhance cell phone communications, far out, solid, right on. If he's doing it to, like, make the internet better, far out, solid, and right on. Right? Like these are reasons for that type of a thing to exist. However, if it's for the explicit purposes of militarization, i.e. the U.S. government, then hell no.
Well, I think that's an important distinction, though. So, I mean, it just being to spy on everyone, that's creepy, but it's not evil. It's unaesthetic, but not immoral. Because if it's your property, you get to use it however you want, well, no matter how creepy that desire is. However, the fact that it's being put in the hands of the most violent gang in the universe,
there we go.
That is where it crosses the line from creepy to evil.
There it is.
So you, in my opinion, have no right to privacy except from the government.
And the government is not an agent of privacy respect. They don't respect privacy. On the contrary, they want to violate your privacy over and over and over again. We saw this with the Patriot Act. We saw this after 9/11 when the Patriot Act came into place and people were like, yes, yes, spy on us, America. Spy on us. It's okay. Except they didn't say spy on us. They always framed it as, oh, we're just spying on, you know, potential terrorists among our midst. But no, they were spying on us, as Edward Snowden has pointed out.
Do you remember when Clapper was, testifying before Congress, which, you know, you go to jail if you lie, in theory, and was asked, well, are you gathering information on Americans? No, we are not. Not at all? Well, not wittingly.
Wait.
And, it turns out not only were you... You were wittingly gathering information on all Americans.
Yeah. I'm hoping that somebody who's listening to us has the volume turned up and also has one of these old school the clapper devices in their living room. And hopefully I just turned their lights off or on because I clapped earlier as well.
But Captain, what if you turned off their radio?
If that worked, then you could call me the Clapton.
Eric Clapton?
No, different Clapton.
Okay.
Kick-ass Clapton.
T-A-I-N, not T-O-N.
Ah,
Claptain, not clapped on.
Not clapped off either.
The clapper. The Pentagram is already a big SpaceX customer, using its Falcon 9 rockets to launch military payloads into space.
Could these people please name something after not an Egyptian god for once?
Starshield's first prototype satellite launched in 2020.
But Egyptian gods are more entertaining. I mean, can you imagine calling Rocket 1, Rocket 1, and Rocket 2, Rocket 2? I mean, come on.
Yeah, make sure you load up those Merlin engines in your Falcon rockets.
Yeah, that would be the IT
Nothing
way.
Nothing occult to see here.
That would be the IT way. It's like 1.0.5.10.0.8.
Well, I mean...
that would be the number of rockets that have gone up thus far. And like the next one would just be the next increment of that yeah. number.
I mean, it doesn't make a splashy headline, but it would be more efficient.
I mean, like even alphabetical might be more digestible to the layman, right? Like, oh, rocket... F, right? Rocket G, right? And that kind of thing. But no. Starshield's first prototype satellite launched in 2020 was part of a separate, roughly $200 million contract that helped position SpaceX for the subsequent $1.8 billion award, one of the sources said. So just to, you know, suss this out in my mind, they're saying that SpaceX put up $200 million. As part of their first launch in 2020, and they're saying that that was sort of in anticipation of this $1.8 billion award for these spy satellites. This is Mr. David Ridley with us. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, back, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, you guys invited me to go to a hearing at the State House, and I was not able to go. So I did the next best thing and listened to the hearing, which was a broadcast, on the State House the state government's YouTube channel. So the New Hampshire State House has had a hearing about DCYF, the Department or the Division of Children, Youth, and Families.
And boy, do they ever divide children and youth from their families.
And one of the few organizations whose name is accurate.
Well, hey now, if you think about what a department is, it's when a thing departs. Education, defense, all of these things are gone as soon as the government takes them over.
Yeah, but this is the division of child and family and whatever else.
Youth,
thank you, yes. Anyway, go ahead, David.
So it wasn't just a hearing. I guess it was a committee meeting. They had a committee studying DCYF problems. And there were some liberty activists, I guess, that went. And when I listened to the hearing, I had some takeaways here. Mm-hmm. I think this is this insightful comment accidentally made by a state rep. It probably explains where a lot of the problems are coming from. She was praising, well, I don't know if praising the DCYF is the right word, but she was talking about something they thought they were doing that was just really great. And she said, quote, "There's a reason that we hire people from New Jersey to head DCYF.
Whoa.
They're eons ahead of us," unquote.
Wow. That's telling. You know, she said the quiet part out loud. Wow.
I've met people from Jersey, and it's anecdotal evidence at best, but I did not get the feeling that they were eons ahead of, well, anybody.
Well, sure, when it comes to state control, they are way ahead of just about everybody, except for, California and New York. Which, again, I still think that New York City should just be part of New Jersey and get it over with. And the rest of New York can go about their lives without them.
Yeah.
Yeah. New Jersey is eons ahead of New Hampshire on the road to the cliff.
Yeah. On the road to tyranny, as it were.
All right. What else, David?
So there was something else that I learned from listening to at least part of this hearing. Apparently, there is a law in New Hampshire, maybe they were just referring to a federal law, but I got the impression it was a state law, requiring people to report on their friends, neighbors, and families.
Requiring? Wow. We require you be a snitch.
That is as dystopian as things get.
That is, apparently, if you suspect child abuse. So I don't know the details on that. I've never seen the RSA. I'm not sure what they're referencing. But that, obviously the end is laudable here, that you want to protect children. But all that really matters in the world is the means, right?
You are criminally liable for missing this opportunity for us to abduct children.
Like, I'm still wondering, is there any factual evidence to support that the state has ever protected any children?
Well, I'm sure that, you know, the broken clock is probably right twice a day.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, there are some cases where, like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Ruby Frankie and Judy Hildebrand case, but Ruby Frankie was a YouTuber / influencer who had a YouTube channel called 8 Passengers where she talked about life and her family, but apparently she was abusing her children and her children were taken away from her. So, I mean, they do something right every once in a while to justify themselves to the people, but they're still a corrupt organization.
Agreed.
I mean, you really have to ask yourself, do they have the staff at these government facilities to rape and beat everyone every day? And if not, then I'm sure there's someone who had a step up from being abducted by them.
Ridley?
I have nothing to add.
All right. You got anything else you wanted to mention on air while we got you?
No, that's what "I have nothing to add" means.
I thought you just meant about that topic. So thank you for the call, Mr. Ridley. Hey, how do people find out about you and your work or what you're up to?
RidleyReport.com.
Very well. Excellent.
Here in New Hampshire, and I'm not going to go into details on this, but one of our community members did, in fact, have strong suspicion of a parent using excessive force against their children.
Right.
And that did, in fact, lead to those children not being with that parent anymore.
Okay.
And this in no way and at no time involved the force of the state.
Woohoo! Sorry, I'm not cheering like the child abuse. I'm cheering the lack
end of
it. State, the lack of state involvement in solving a family matter or a child abuse issue.
Because that's the way it should be done. It should be people looking out for each other. It's not this whole top-down authoritarian system. It's got to be people looking out for each other and not hiding things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out monopolies provide terrible service. Who'da thunk it?
Well,
and that includes a monopoly on protecting children.
And I have some experience within the system, albeit, you know, a couple of two, three decades ago, maybe more. I'm old, but foster care, that type of a thing. I see how the government handles children.
Yeah.
I was like, I was fortunate that I only got to be placed in one foster home where there was abuse. I got to consider myself lucky because of that.
Yeah.
I'm also fortunate in that, like, I was a capable child. Right. And that is to say, I didn't have any, visual defects. Right. I had both my arms and legs. I could walk. Right. That kind of thing. I wasn't a special needs child at all. Right. But like there were children who came through the foster care system who were not as lucky as I, who, born without a foot or had some sort of an accident or some sort of a birth defect. Right. That like made them, less than a whole person, in normal terms, right? And for those people, man, I can't even imagine what they had to go through the foster care systems, orphanages, that type of thing. Some of these kids ended up being what we call lifers. For those of you out there not familiar with like family court and all that kind of thing, not that I'm very familiar with it either, but every year there are so many children who don't have a family. They don't get adopted. Most of them, of course, are over the age of 10, right? For some reason, families aren't real keen on adopting children, over the age of 10, particularly, once they hit puberty, right? If they've hit puberty, all bets are off. No one's adopting these kids for the most part. And so these kids grow up either in orphanages or foster homes, foster home to foster home to foster home. It's very rare that, or at least it was very rare when I was going through it, that like you would remain in a foster home for the duration of your childhood. It was always, you're going to go over here. Oh, no, we decided that, no, you're going to go over here now. And you got to move a state away or, five towns away. You never get to see the foster family that you had some ties with or you started making connections with. You were just like booted. Like, yeah. Bam, you got to go. Right.
Yeah, and, another and example of a monopoly providing terrible service because there's a monopoly on adoption.
So what I'm getting at is something that we alluded to and Crichton alluded to as well. If you remove a child from its community, you are removing it from its support system, and you are in fact placing it, you are in fact likely committing abuse by placing it into a state system.
And that's true because, you know, early life, we begin the earliest, our earliest lives, what am I trying to say? Our early life is the most important thing, important time period.
For our development, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, because then we are building connections. Then we're building neurological connections. And as we build these neurological connections early in life, the way we attach to others, the way we work with others is developed during this time period. If you're going from foster home to foster home without making meaningful connections to a caregiver, that's going to affect you.
Yeah. Or
relationships wise.
Or you're going from foster home to foster home, making meaningful connections, but getting yanked out of them at the state's whim.
And yeah. That creates trust issues in later relationships because how can I build a safe relationship with somebody if they're just going to leave me or if I'm going to be taken from them?
Right.
And this is just one of the myriad of different ways that the state drives human beings insane.
I believe this is Rob in Vermont calling. You're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, I went to reform school, too.
Do you feel reformed?
No. All right. No. But, I mean, I went into the foster care system at a very young age.
Yep.
When I was born in over in Concord in 64, I mean, unbeknownst to me at the time, you know, I left the state hospital and I bounced around for the first 3 to 5 years of my life, you know, in foster homes. And I never bonded with anyone. I never bonded with my mother, and it just... It's hard to explain how that feels, and then going through trials and tribulations with, you know, other people and other kids and stuff like that, and it's just, it can really make for a horrible life.
Oh, it sounds like it can. It sounds like you have some emotion in your voice, Rob. I mean,
yeah, it's been a struggle for me for a lot of years, and you know, and it's hard and it's a struggle to talk about this because it's so painful, you know. And
well, we appreciate you calling in to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you for being vulnerable with us and a listening audience. It's got to be hard to talk about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was one of the ones that talked at, you know, over in Concord there when Dave Ridley called. And you know, it was really difficult just to stand in front of that camera or sit out in front of it and, you know, sort of try to tell your story and you know, get people to listen. It took me a couple of days even just to sit down and watch that because, like I said, it was a horrible thing.
Yeah, I bet.
Shit that I've gone through. I'm sorry.
We can't say it on the radio, Rob.
Hang on. We'll give you this one, Rob, because I know you didn't mean to. But stand by.
Right.
All right. The dumper has passed. Let's watch the language, please.
Yeah, we can definitely appreciate that it's very emotional for you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've made a lot of friends and stuff like that through listening to this show because I've been listening for the last 16, 17 years. So that's sort of been my lifeline. And you know, hopefully the show continues on. Hopefully we'll get back Beer Talk Live you know, I don't really have anything else more to say, but I'm glad that I was able to at least get this out there. And you know, I don't want anything from anybody. Yeah, I'm not asking for anything.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say, Captain. I got to go.
When it comes to a community, we want two things from the people who've done wrong.
Yeah.
Number one, we want you to stop doing wrong. And number two, we want you to make up to the people that you've done wrong to.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's functional human behavior,
yeah,
is to encourage those things. And there isn't even an option for those things in the system that we have.
Yeah.
Like, there is some mild echo or pretense of making right what you've done wrong, but it's nothing like actually making it up to the person that you wronged.
Yeah.
It's all phrased in the sense of like, oh, well, you wronged society, and by society I mean me, the ruler. When no, you wronged a person.
Right.
There's an actual human being, and they get to tell you exactly where they are on you making it up to them.
There's some other things that the judicial system ignores that society does not, right? For example, have either of you guys ever been mad at somebody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, come on, dude.
Sure, people, sure.
I've seen you
as an android Vulcan.
Yeah. So yes, you have been mad at somebody. How about this? Have you ever been mad at somebody and then some period of time goes by and you're just no longer mad at them? You haven't necessarily set out to forgive them. They haven't gone out of their way to, you know, correct whatever it was that made you mad. But it's just some time has gone by and now you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm not mad at you anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. This isn't accounted for in the institutions in any way, shape or form. Right. This sort of period of time for you to, you know, sort of get over it naturally or whatever, right? It's just not accounted for. And, like, people don't even talk about it. There's not even a word for that.
Yeah.
Right, that I'm aware of. If there is, please call. But yeah, I'm not aware that there's a term for the period of time in which you're just no longer mad at somebody for something.
Well, there's definitely a criminal word for that when I'm trying to think of the phrase. But statute of limitations.
Okay, right. When the ability for you to be prosecuted by the institution has gone by. Like, if you kick this guy in the nards, we're only gonna arrest you if it's been within the past 7 years. If it was 8 years ago, yeah, we're not even gonna talk about it. Right. Whereas, like, if your friend kicked you in the nards, you might just sort of forget about it 6 months later and be like, look, dude, I'm not mad at you anymore, right? You know, if they're a friend or something like that. Like, this is one of the things you start looking at forgiveness, human forgiveness, right? This is one of the things that doesn't get talked about. It's like they say, there's all these phrases, time heals all wounds. And it's like, no, it doesn't. But what time does is allow you to heal from the trauma inside and turn around and forgive those who traumatized you.
Well,
forgive.
Well, I think that forgiveness should be spared only for those who apologize.
I don't know if I agree with you on that.
I think that otherwise you are just incentivizing people to do bad behavior. Apologize, I do mean two things specifically.
Okay.
Like, number one, in the usual sense of make an apology. Like, dude, I'm sorry I kicked you in the nuts that time.
Right.
That wasn't cool.
Right.
And number two, stop it.
Yeah, don't kick anybody else in the nards. Yeah.
Like, apologos. There's this pattern, logos. You need to go from that pattern. So, you kicked someone in the nuts. That means that you have some kind of mental pattern where you're not acknowledging people's bodily autonomy. So you need to do what you need to do to start acknowledging everyone's bodily autonomy.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.